page cuff on the top, numbers, and there's a big paragraph that was a Yuvan, and with this I'll understand. Chapter 14, he's talking about the relevance of being a Beinoni. A Beinoni being a person who has constant struggles but always wins them, and says, basically puts it down, that if it's possible for a person to sacrifice their lives, give their lives up, allow themselves to be killed rather than be separated from God in an act of what we would refer to as Kiddush Hashem, shouldn't they be able to control themselves? I mean, controlling yourself is a lot easier than dying, after all. So that's sort of like the...
I don't know about that.
Personally, I would disagree with that, because dying is just something that happens.
You can do that one time and it's done.
Yeah. Trying is a constant battle.
Okay, so... you're reminding me of the... there's a famous sicha that is a Pesach sicha, where the Rebbe says in Kara's decree, throw all the boys into the river and let the girls live, is what the decree says in Shmos. So the Rebbe says, well, you just make the decree, throw all the boys into the river, don't say anything about the girls, and then you know the girls don't get thrown into the river, the girls don't get killed. So, but it says, no, Paro made two decrees. All the boys get thrown into the river and get killed. That's a physical death. But v'kol habas techayin, all of the girls you should make live, is what the translation would literally be.
Right.
And in that instance, it's a spiritual death, because what Paro wanted was for the girls to assimilate into Egyptian culture.
Right.
And that's a spiritual thing, and that's an ongoing thing, and much worse than a one-time physical death. So, if we're going to debate with the Alter Rebbe that it should be, but death hurts a whole lot more than having to control yourself. So,
I can imagine that, at least.
So, uveze yuven kofel lashon hashua teitzadik v'alti rasha. The beginning of the first chapter, in the first chapter, he asks a whole bunch of questions. The basic premise of the Tanya starts. Tanya, we learn in the end of the third chapter of Masechta Nida, Mashvim Oisi Teitzadik Valtisi Rasha. The soul, before it comes to the body, is brought before the Almighty.
Right.
And it says, when is this person going to be born? When is this person going to die? How much is this person going to make in the course of their lifetime? Who are they going to marry? How many kids are they going to have? What's their IQ going to be? What profession are they going to occupy? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, on April 20th, what color shirt will they wear?
Right.
All of this has already been predetermined. What's not been determined is this person going to be good or bad? And so in order to help out the neshama is administered an oath. It told us you're going to go into a place which is void of godliness, and there's all kinds of temptation, and you're going to be handicapped because the soul's going to come into the body 13 years after the animal soul's already made itself at home.
Yeah, indeed, yes.
And we want you to be perfectly righteous. So we're going to administer an oath to be perfectly righteous and not be wicked.
That fixes
the purpose. Yes, it does, doesn't it? The purpose of taking an oath, it talks about it, is why would a person, so much more so than an oath, would be a vow, a neder. The person says, I'm not eating cake, okay? I have to lose weight, and therefore I am making a vow that I am not going to eat cake.
Right.
Okay, so what does that do? So that if the person now sees a piece of cake, rather than just thinking, it was a piece of cake on her, he's going to think, wait a minute. I took a vow, I'm not going to eat cake. And what that then does is it gives the person that extra little bit of a lift to be able to fight their desires.
Right.
So here it is, the neshama is told, listen, good or bad, that's up to you. But we want you to swear that you be good and not be bad.
Mm.
Okay, so the question is, it's the same thing. If you're going to swear that you're going to be righteous, why do you need to swear that you won't be wicked? If you're righteous, then you're not wicked. It's mutually exclusive. If I'm doing this, then I can't possibly be doing that. So why is it that it's put in that statement too? Even though the Rambam in the Laws of Shavuos says that when an oath is administered in a Beis Din, the standard procedure is swear that you did this and you did not do the opposite. That's the way it's administered in a court of law. Mm-hmm. But here, this is not that type of an oath. Mm-hmm. Here, this is talking about something in the future. Right. Swear that you will not.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay, so why then do we have to have the double lashon? Okay, he asks the question again in chapter 17 with a whole different spin because he's trying to get something else out of it. Okay. So why do we do it over here? Why is it that he says, L'char tamua. It's a wonder. Ki ma'ach ha'shemash bim oisei te tzadik. Since they make him take an oath that he should be righteous, why does he have to take another oath that he won't be wicked?
Right.
That was the question back in chapter 1. But since not anybody gets to be a tzaddik, if anybody has a question, just interrupt me immediately, please.
Yeah.
And people don't have the choice if they're going to be righteous or not. We already talked about already since chapter 10 that tzaddikim, they're pretty much born that way.
So how can you take a vow to be righteous if you're not born one?
Well, there's another question then is, if you are born one, then what do you need to take the vow for? That becomes then a shuvah shav.
Okay, but why? Yeah, okay.
A shuvah shav means an empty vow.
You cannot take
a vow that I'm going to breathe 20 times a minute.
Because what if you breathe 19 times?
No, because you automatically breathe how many times you breathe. You're not really in control of how many times you breathe. Okay, you never thought about it. Maybe sometimes you did think about it, but until I just mentioned it right now, you weren't thinking about how many breaths you were taking up until now. Nor can you take an oath that the sky is blue. I swear that the sky is blue. It's a wasted vow.
Right. And then so what is a tzaddik?
So it's pointless. So this guy, you want to say that why should this guy who's born a tzaddik have to take an oath?
Either way.
To be
righteous and not to be wicked.
Yes.
Not only why does he have to, but he shouldn't, according to what we're saying.
Correct. Well, it says that a person should never trust themselves.
That's a general statement.
I mean, you're looking at, for example, you're looking at Yechiden Kohen Gadol, who was Kohen Gadol for 80 years, from the time he was 40 till the time he was 120.
Mm.
And when he was 120, that means he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim 240 times, three times every Yom Kippur. There were people during Bayis Sheni, he lived in the second base of Mikdash, people who would go in, Kohanim that were appointed, who would walk in and drop dead immediately.
Yeah.
And he walked in and walked out 240 times.
Right.
The last year of his life, he said, the rabbis are full of it, I'm going to go become a tzaduki and forget about this oral tradition stuff that they're making up. Okay, so a person can never trust themselves and say, yeah, I got it.
Right.
You know, I'm in the groove. So if a person says that the neshama takes that oath, so it's supposed to help them.
Okay.
People don't have the choice in this. He says, kol kach. Remember, the Tanya is very exact. The Alter Rebbe spent an inordinate amount of time making sure that every single word was where it was supposed to be, when it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So he says that people don't have the Bechira Kol Kach, so much so, Lehisana Gal Hashem Be'emes, to truly take joy in God. Okay? To delight in spirituality. Now, so that doesn't mean that people don't get something out of it. I remember back in high school, there were those strange kids who used to say, I get high on God. Okay, they probably didn't have them when you were in in high school, but in my high school,
I knew people like that.
At Berkeley High, they got high on something else.
Right, yeah. You know, I went to Columbia High, and they called it Columbian High. You know, so. But there were those small minority of kids who everybody thought were icky, who said, "Well, I get high on God." Okay, because no, they didn't. I'm not going in there, but. It's talk about the Rebbe Rishab talks in Kuntra Samayim, which is one of his magnum opuses, one of his major works. It's a very small book, but packs a big wallop. And he talks at the beginning of this work, different types of pleasure. And he says the most basis, of course, pleasure is food and sleep, etc., those type of things. But then you have higher types of pleasure. Art, music, that's referred to as, you know, cultured, more refined. A person who's really like into the, you know, the symphony, you know, is looked upon as being something less of a grub boor than a person who just likes to shovel food into his mouth. Hmm. And then in a higher level than that is the people who are involved with intellectual pursuits.
Yes.
You know, some people enjoy math and sciences and, you know, crossword puzzles, Sudoku, whatever, you know, so that to use their head. But all of those pleasures are called animal pleasures. Those are all pleasures of the animal soul. Delighting in God is the highest level of pleasure, quote unquote, that the animal soul can enjoy. And this is not something that's talking about people who are up here someplace. Because when we have this commandment that we say every single day, we remind ourselves that we have a commandment that says you should love the Lord your God with all your heart. V'chol levavacha. And Rashi asks the question, why doesn't it say v'chol levavacha? It says levavacha with two vases to indicate both sides of the heart. That not only is it that the godly soul has to love God, the animal soul also has to love God. Mm-hmm. So there are things that, what is the animal souls? We've learned about it all this time. What is it the pursuit, the animal soul pursue? The animal soul pursues pleasure. And if we show the animal soul that learning is pleasurable and doing mitzvahs is pleasurable, and davening is pleasurable, and giving tzedakah is pleasurable. So then the animal says, soul says, yeah, I like doing this. Right. You know, this is fun. You know, and that's why we're all sitting around this table right now. It was our animals that actually dragged us here. Hey, let's go have fun at Finman's house. Boy, we know how to live. Party time. Yes. So, the... anyway, so wild and crazy guys, yes.
I just come for the my wife's.
Yes. Anyway, so the animal soul is totally its total impetus is pleasure. But we show it, we coax it that yes, godliness can also be pleasurable. And even understanding the greatest concepts, the most sublime philosophical concepts in Judaism, it's the animal soul that has to understand them. Because the godly soul doesn't need to be fixed. The godly soul knows all this stuff already. Okay, when it says talks about that, for the 9 months that the fetus is in the womb, it's sitting and learning Torah with an angel, and then when it comes out, the angel smacks it on the lip, it forgets all the Torah that it learned. What's learning Torah over there? The animal soul doesn't come into the body until birth. So what's learning Torah? The body of the embryo? The body of the embryo is nothing more than a limb of the mother. It has to be the godly soul. So the godly soul's got it down already. The godly soul knows it. The godly, we said in chapter 2, the godly soul's a chelek elokam ma'al mamash. It's a portion of infinity. You can't do much better than be infinity. Because a portion of infinity is infinite. So the godly soul doesn't need to be fixed. It doesn't need to be led to. Other on the contrary, it's like pushing, go, 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 let me out of here, you know, let's do this. The animal soul now is saying, okay, I also want to. So everybody, you don't have to be a big tzaddik to enjoy doing things Jewish. Because this is a commandment that's not commanded. There are no commandments that are commanded only to tzaddikim. Okay? This doesn't say any place. So by the way, this one, most of the world doesn't have to do. Every commandment that Moshe brought down from Har Sinai is commanded to every one of us.
Right. Yeah.
So after that, Hashem Lekecha v'chol levavecha was given to every single one of us, and every one of us has the ability, if not just the obligation, to enjoy Judaism somewhat. Everybody's going to be on their own level. Obviously, how much it is the expression yegaitu matzasi tamim, how much effort you're going to put into it, lefum sara agra, how much effort you're going to put into it is going to be how much you're going to get out of it. And the relationship that you have with Hashem is the relationship that you make with Hashem. You want to do Judaism light? God says, fine, we'll do, you know, Judaism light. You'll get God light. You want to do Judaism heavy? So Hashem says, good, fine, you get God heavy. You want to get into it? God gets into it. However much you want to do, that's how much Hashem responds. The expression is as if you open yourself up, the amount of the pinhole. Hashem opens himself up the amount of the gates to the Ulam and the Beis HaMikdash, which were 60 amos wide, 60 cubits wide. Two pinholes, 120. And it just keeps going there. And it's totally incomplete. God says whatever he wants, fine. God's not criticizing. Every good thing that a person does is good. And God says, yes. Okay, I had a maisa today. I remember the guy, he's a single man, a doctor. Okay? And he works at a clinic in Detroit.
Yeah.
And he says these young girls come in, 15, 16 years old, that require very personal examinations. And he said, should I be beating myself up that I have these thoughts entering my head? That of course I would never act on. You know, it's not worth losing his license and going to jail for. And simply I said to him, I said, on the contrary, if you didn't think those thoughts, I wouldn't think you were human.
See, that's right. What Manus Friedman says.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's true.
I was just reading it recently. So when he said it, I was like,
yeah,
all these people who try to claim, oh, we're so holy and we don't have this thought and we don't have it.
Baloney.
Excuse me.
Baloney. But I said, but then I said to him, when you had that thought, what did you do? And he said, I said to myself, stop it. Be professional. I said, terrific. What does it say in Tanya? Later on in chapter 28, 29, it says, when you get a thought, like, push it out with two hands. And what happens when a person does that? Istalik yikar de kut shebrichu v'chol olmim. The glory of Hashem is elevated throughout the entire spectrum of creation. From just not deciding, I'm not going to think one thought. God basically goes, yes, it was worth making a creation. Just for that. And why is a person going to do such a thing?
Because they can?
Because they can.
If they couldn't resist it, then yeah.
Exactly. And I happen to point out, listen, I don't get put into that situation. You get put into that situation because there's a reason. Because
you can do it.
You can do it.
Hashem does not give you any challenges that you can't
That's
pass.
Correct. I don't work in a clinic in Detroit. Thank God. Anyway. So everybody has the ability to lehisanig al Hashem, at least a little bit. And however much he said be'emes. The Alter Rebbe, when Alter Rebbe uses the word be'emes, and for sure when he uses the expression emes la mitai, an absolute truth, he's not pulling punches.
Right.
That's what the word emes means. Because emes means, just as the word indicates, it's an aleph, a mem, a tav, from the beginning through the middle to the end. An aleph is the first letter, a mem is the middle letter, and a tav is the last letter. It has to be constant.
Right.
So says, when do you get to take a vacation? Never, because not in this world, not in the world to come. It says that the tzaddikim in the world to come, what are they doing? They're going from one level to the next. So there's no rest there either. We can, a person can never put their guard down. And the opposite of delighting in Hashem truly would be finding anything in opposition to Hashem's desires, which he calls that word ra, which is translated as evil. But I don't like the word evil because it's a Christian word. So since it is that a person, we're not expecting them. Well, try yourself and try your best. But at least don't try to mess up.
Yeah.
That's at the very least, the kol hapachis. At the very least. You're not expected to be a tzaddik. But try not to mess things up too much.
Yeah.
Make the world, this is one of the things that a person should do by Kriya Shema Al Mita before a person goes to sleep. One of the things that they should look at and think about is, how is the world better that I lived today than yesterday? And there has to be an answer to the question. You can't just say, no, because the Almighty gave us each another day, right. And he gave us another day, not to do what we did yesterday, because we did that yesterday, we're done with that already.
Right.
What did we do today that validates our being here today?
Right.
What's the real answer to that?
That you have only to answer only yourself. You know.
But, I mean...
You have to be true. In other words, it's very easy to beat up on a person and say, I had a horrible day today, I didn't do this, and I didn't do that, and I didn't do this, and I could have done this a whole lot better. That's real easy for a person to start kicking themselves, and there is a time for that. But a person also has to recognize, well, what did I do today that was okay? I don't know, let's see, my oldest is 26, probably about 12 years ago. We instituted something at our dinner table. Okay, what was happening is the kids would come home. Okay, at that time we had basically all 7 kids were in school. Okay, and all here in Detroit. And what would happen is this would come home complaining about this, and this teacher did this, and this kid pulled my hair that way, and I got sent to this thing, and So my wife instituted, what good thing happened to you today?
Right.
Did they not get dinner otherwise?
It was in the middle of dinner. But it was, lunch was not, recess was not, the school was finally over was not. There's certain parameters and guidelines.
Right, right.
No, sit down and think. There has to have been something good. Was it something that you learned and something that you did? Is it? Because if you stop and you think about it, and when we have people would come over, anybody comes to the table at dinner time, okay, we ask them also, what good thing happened to you today?
Right.
That's a beautiful thing.
They have to say it also. And people are just like, having never thought about it.
Yeah. You have to work at it.
Because what it did though is it puts the kids in a frame of reference that, I got supper coming in and on the way home, let's see, what good thing happened? I'm gonna have to come up and think this happens, that. They're doing that all before they sit to the table, so it makes it ready. The day wasn't so bad. Mm. There was something here going on.
Yes.
So when a person, Kriya Shema Al Mita, Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, they have a place there for saying Al Chait. And if I was blemished this letter of Hashem's name and that letter of Hashem's name, you got this place where to beat yourself up.
Right.
Okay? But a person has to think, well, what did I do today that I deserved that the Almighty gave me another day? And then, but, to say, well, tomorrow has to be more.
Yeah.
I resolve that tomorrow I will do it better. Yeah. That's a Kriya Shema Al Mita. Yeah. That's what we're supposed to do before we go to sleep. Yeah. That is, to be a tzaddik, you have no choice. But not to be a rasha, that you do have the ability. The rishus nesana l'kol adam, that everybody was given permission, lim shel baruch taivasa shebelibay, to control his desires, olichvaish yitzrei, and to conquer his yetzara, even if it's only just for this minute. We're not talking quantity. Quantities, because when you're talking quantity compared to Hashem, how much quantity matters to Hashem? Like, when are you going to come up with a big enough number where Hashem says, "Oh, that's pretty big"? No, that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's the quality. Okay, even if it is that it says a person is like he mentions later on in chapter 29 that in the yeshivas in Talmudic time, so breakfast was noon. Everybody else ate at 10 o'clock, but Chachami made it at noon. Why? So they could say, "Listen, I controlled myself for 2 hours. I sat and I learned." Even though, what were they going to do after they got through eating? They're going to go sit and learn some more. So it's not like there was they added 2 hours of learning into their day.
Right.
They didn't. They just shuffled things around. The same amount of learning, same amount of eating. Mm-hmm. But they did it in order to conquer the Yetzirah. Just for 2 hours. That's all. Hashem says, fine.
Right.
That a person has the ability not to be wicked even for 1 hour. And that's fine. And that's terrific. There is a story that when the Lubavitcher Yeshiva opened up in Poland in the 1930s, so it attracted the local Bachram, of course. Okay, there weren't that many Bachram who got out of Russia, and when the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe, opened up this yeshiva, so the promise was 3 squares a day and a place to sleep. So it attracted the poverty in Poland in the 1930s was beyond description, and so a place which was offering 3 meals
food
a day,
food and shelter, yeah,
yeah, this was like already something. And he got to be very, the Friedrich Ebert was very, very selective.
Yeah.
Because otherwise his yeshiva would have been 10,000 bachur instead of 200. And he demanded from the administration a report on a regular basis. I believe it was weekly. What's doing with every student? Like, in their face, what is with them? So it once happened that one of the staff reported on a certain student that before davening, he sits and thinks about what he learned beforehand. He says the mimer that he learned in the morning, he sits and thinks before davening for 5 minutes. The previous Lubavitcher Rebbe came out with an answer, just like filled the page, about what a wonderful thing this is. That this person stopped for 5 minutes to think. Not that he's sitting for half an hour, he's sitting and delving in deep Kabbalistic thought for 2 hours. No, 5 minutes. It doesn't, like, it's not the, and it's a very hard thing to do, to think about something for 5 minutes.
Yeah, to sit and dwell on it for 5 minutes.
That's a lot. You can exercise your brain a little bit, stretch it out. Try 30 seconds first.
Yeah.
And when you get 30 seconds down pretty good, try 45. You know, so. Ben b'chinas sermon rabbi, b'chinas v'asei tev, that a person shouldn't be wicked, whether it be in turning away from evil or doing good. Ve'ein tev ela teira. When we say doing good, it means Torah and mitzvahs. D'hainu tamal teira shekeneged kulam. Okay, and he mentioned in the first chapter, that one of the most serious things that a person can do is waste time. Because when a person wastes time, how are they going to make it up? I didn't learn 10 minutes. I wasted 10 minutes. So you know what? I'll learn 10 extra minutes. Where? You're supposed to be learning all the time. V'hegista b'yam v'layla.
Right.
If you're going to learn those 10 extra minutes later, you could have learned the 10 minutes that you wasted and learned the 10 extra minutes later,
right,
and not making up anything.
Right.
So that's why it says it's a very, very hard thing to make up for time lost. One of the big pet peeves of the Alter Rebbe.
Yeah.
So he says, the Talmud Torah keneged kulam, that the study of Torah weighs equal to all of the mitzvahs.
Hmm.
How so in this instance? Is because no matter how much a person learns, a person can never say, oh, that Torah stuff?
Got it all. Did it. Yeah, been there, done that. Yeah.
I did it.
Yeah, got it.
It's an impossibility. But now, here's something which is really pretty flipped out. A person should set aside a time to also put this piece of advice to his heart, to train himself to find something, some physical pleasure, disgusting. And this is not also one of those things, like, how could you train yourself to think that this is disgusting? Ask any former smoker.
Yeah.
Well, smoking is disgusting.
Wait, you got the guy who's smoking, okay? The worst person to deal with somebody about smoking is a guy who used to smoke.
Right.
And now becomes a militant anti-smoker. Because what? Since they stopped, they see how really disgusting it is, because you and I were just talking about how disgusting it is.
Yeah, they go over the edge.
Okay, but these guys know how disgusting it is.
Right, right, right.
And to suddenly say, no, this is like beyond whatever I'm going to be involved in.
Right.
Okay, and he says even further, he says for this one, don't get excited. Let me explain this one. Isha chamas malei etzaya. A woman is a vessel full of filth. Okay, gavna. What is this doing over here? What is a person doing? We get bombarded all the time by outside stimuli. In the Alter Rebbe's time, when women were dressed up to here and down to there,
right,
so the halbitzer. What happens to us is you could be standing in a supermarket and suddenly be accosted with immorality. So what should a person do? He should train himself to think that's really disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's the alternative? We're not going there.
Right.
Don't need to.
Right.
Does he really think it's disgusting? No. If a person has to stand there and say, that's disgusting, they don't think it's disgusting at all.
Exactly.
But what he hopes on doing by doing this is, first of all, there's a control there. That it's one thing to think about something. It's another thing totally to act about on it. So like this, if a person talks himself into it, that's a disgusting thing. So then the person will maybe a little bit believe in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's a disgusting thing.
So is this the pushing out with both hands?
This is even more than that.
And both feet.
This is more than that. Pushing out with both hands. No. Pushing out with both hands would be, I'm not going to look at that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
This is taking one more step and saying, you know, that really is nauseating. Right.
No, it's.
You know, if a person's ever going to become nauseated by it,
I mean, he's trying to cultivate a nausea.
Yeah, I mean,
cultivate the idea that it's nauseating.
I mean, you can understand, for example, the smell emanating from a non-kosher restaurant. I find it just sickening.
Mm.
Okay, especially if they're cooking pork. It's just like, ugh, you know, my next door neighbor. And he's got he's got an oil barrel, 55-gallon drum,
yeah,
that's been cut in half lengthwise with a hinge. Right. And he throws all the stuff in there, and he's throwing in a half a pig in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
The windows on that side of the house are all closed.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't want, no.
Thank you, but no.
No. It's just like, oh, please.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, am I exotic? Oh, no. But that I find the smell abominable. Okay, why? Because I told myself, that's really disgusting, that smell. Mm. Okay, am I patting myself on the back? No, because if I can do it, anybody can do it. Mm. And so too it is anything that a person would see as for sure something which is forbidden. That's what it says. There's a discussion in the, I believe it's the Gemara, that when a person encounters something which is forbidden, what should they say? One opinion says, it's forbidden, I'm not allowed to have it, it's disgusting. The other opinion says, a person should say, it's really probably very good. People do eat the stuff. I mean, pork must taste good because you got all those people eating it. But what can I do? Hashem told me I'm not allowed to have it. So the second way is for a tzaddik. A tzaddik can say, yeah, it's probably pretty good, but I'm not supposed to have it, so I'm not going to have it. Because he doesn't have the desire for it anyway. The person who has the desire for it has to say, no, I'm not allowed to have it. It's disgusting. It's not for me. Okay? It's a barrier. It's a fence.
Right.
To keep the person from crossing a line. You might say. V'kein kol minei metamim adanim nasim kach chamas mali. Okay, and so too also all other types of delights and physical pleasures, they also become like a vessel full of filth. Okay, person sitting there looking at that huge piece of birthday cake and is thinking to himself, it's just going to wind up on my waist. I don't know. And that's talking about a kosher birthday cake. V'kein kol tainugim lezach chacham raim and neilad mehan. And so too also with all pleasures of the world, it says the wise man sees his birth, meaning if a person's able to discern what's going to happen if I do this before they do it. I mean, he gets pretty graphic over here. Shesayfam lirka v'liyais rima v'ashpa. If I eat this, I'm going to get fatter. And what happens if I get fatter? I'm going to die, and then there's going to be more for the worms to eat. Very graphic. The hepach, and exactly the opposite. I mean, those are suggestions.
Yes.
For example, to try and turn a person's raging desires off. But here, it just like it switches, because easier than turning a person's desires off is to redirect them. Okay. I learned with a guy who's OCD. This guy is, you know what OCD is, yeah? This guy is, he's like classic. He has to check the locks 10 times before he goes to sleep at night. In my house, he wouldn't be able to survive to leave the doors and windows open. I mean, you know. Before he leaves the house, he has to, like, you know, check the stove 3 times to make sure it's off. All kinds of classic stuff. Okay? Go shopping, buys things he doesn't need, has to return them, etc. Yada 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 yada. So I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not prescribing anything. But I tell him, listen, if you're gonna be OCD, be OCD for God.
Right. Pick something.
Pick something. Become a philanthropist. Yeah. Become a compulsive person who goes out and puts tefillin on people.
Right.
Tell yourself you're not going to sleep until you can get another Jew to do a mitzvah.
Right.
Okay, they'll do something good with it. Right. Because when you think about it, and from what I understand, the world's great scientists were all OCD. Because otherwise, how could they sit there and do what they were able to do
in
dealing with minutia and trying to figure things out and why are they not working if they weren't be obsessive compulsive? And the story that I was raised with, you know, being that Edison's lab was in West Orange, New Jersey, just a stone's throw from Newark where I grew up. and that Edison's first light bulb lasted 40 hours, and he sat there looking at this light bulb for 40 hours. You tell me this guy's not nuts?
Yep.
You know, take watches, you know, hey, listen, you know, every 5 minutes, go back, you'll see, you know, nope, he had to know how long the thing burned for. Sat and watched the thing for 40 hours.
Quality control.
No,
nuts.
Well, Amuna is the cure for OCD.
Amuna. Okay.
If you just say it's all in Hashem's hands, there's really not much you can do.
That's a lot of...
I don't think you really grasp OCD.
I was going to say, no. That's coming from someone who is an OCD.
No. I mean, it's chemical misfires, but if you can gain a level of Amuna, then you can at least bypass some of it.
Okay.
If it works.
Hey, people do it with hypnosis. Why not consciously?
Yeah, if it works. Okay. You know, so I just told him his light is just redirected. Right. You know, so it says, Vahapitli Sanigli Smaich Bahasham. You want to have pleasures? Go have pleasures with God. By sitting and meditating on the greatness of Hashem, each one according to his own capabilities. How much does he know? How much does he learn? Even though he knows, he's never going to get there. To have to experience true delight in God, as it's talked about in the books, which you use the word true, means that it doesn't stop.
Yes.
He knows, I'm never going to get it. But, I'll get some sort of a dugmai, comparable piece of the action, you might say. Afal Pekang, but nonetheless, turn the page. Hu yaseh shaloi l'kayim es hashur shemashbim oisi titzadik. V'hashem yaseh toi be'enav. At least do your part. He's at least doing his part. That when he says that, you should be a tzadik. Okay, because it says, now, because why? Person takes an oath before he's born that he's going to be a tzadik. You can't just poo-poo it and say, oops, didn't mean it.
Yeah. Just kidding.
Yeah, no. That part of the... Because Hashem could have just said, listen, you're going into the world, we're going to make you take an oath, don't be wicked. Finished.
Right.
We're not expecting you to be a tzaddik, but take the oath, just take the oath, don't be wicked. No, we're given the oath, be righteous, and don't be wicked. So that must be something that we have to do as our part in the be righteous part.
Right.
In other words, it's that you don't have to be a tzaddik, but you have to engage in the process.
At least make an effort.
You have to put forth something over there. Mm-hmm. So that it doesn't, because in Judaism, it doesn't matter that you're there. What matters is at least you're pointed in the right direction.
Right.
That's all. Just one step today, another step tomorrow. And if a person never gets there in the course of their whole entire lifetime, doesn't matter. Because that wasn't what the program is. Just be pointed in the right direction. The aid.
Right.
And furthermore, Shahargal al kol davar sultan nasitev asheni. If a person can make himself frequently doing this, make this habitual, so then it becomes second nature. Okay, like all those militant non-smokers. Mm-hmm. Okay, for them it becomes smoky. Ew, no. Okay. For them, their nature is now such that they're not going to smoke.
Right. You know, it's interesting to say that, because, I mean, for me, I'm not perfect in it, but one thing that really, really bugs me is people talking during davening. And it just, like, it's like nails on a chalkboard. And I think it was, because, like, I think I used to be more like that. Like you're saying with the smoking, and I've, again, not that I'm perfect in it, but I try to make an effort, so when I hear other people talking, because it was such an issue for me, it's like I'm hypersensitive to it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty, yeah. You know,
So, and that becomes then a person's second nature. Which, changing your nature is the hardest thing there possibly is. And if you talk about changing nature, and all the miracles that God performs from the beginning of time until today, the only miracle where there was a change of nature was the splitting of the sea. Everywhere else, nature was kind of like stretched, or maybe not even stretched, maybe just sort of like enveloped. I mean, classically, we say there are three different types of miracles. You have a Purim-type miracle, where you could say it wasn't a miracle at all.
Totally.
It was godless. There's no God in the whole book.
Right.
There was lobbying, and there was politicking, and there was maneuvering. You could say it wasn't a miracle. Hanukkah, what happened over there, would have been a tremendous miracle if the Maccabees didn't find a jar of oil. They found a jar of vinegar.
Right.
And said, you know what, we only got vinegar. Let's light this.
Let's burn that, yeah.
That would have been a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Okay, but what happened is oil burns. If you'd be a Cohen who had been stuck in the woods or stuck in hiding in a cave, and they came out and they said, okay, the Greeks are gone, you come out now. Third day, you walk into the base of Mikdash, you see the menorah burning. You're going to think anything happened?
No.
No.
They lit the menorah today.
They lit the menorah.
Right.
Okay? So the laws of nature were stretched. One day, stretched to 8 days. Only by Kriyas Yamsa, because water is naturally flowing in a smooth path.
Right.
And the Almighty made it that it should stand up and polarized.
Right.
It's the only time it ever happened. Because changing nature is not something that we expect.
Right.
I get a cock that when God created the world, way back in the six Sheshis and Breshis, and they had the waters on the second day, when God put the upper water in the upper and the lower water in the lower, and the lower water was complaining, God said, listen, I'm only putting you there on one condition. And that when the time comes, you don't give me any problems when I have to split you. Okay, you're going to split when the Jews need to cross? Fine, I'll create you. You don't want to do that? I'm not going to create you. Okay, so there's a whole, I don't understand lobbying necessarily between God and water, but, so changing nature, for a person to change their nature, you can cover it up real well.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I mean, there's the famous story with the Rambam and the cats. You know this story?
Yeah, with the servant cats.
Yeah, the servant cats. You know what I'm talking about? No?
Tell the story.
How long ago did I tell the story? Like, it's already on tape already from,
Tell the story. Tell
people
the
listening story. Online are going to say, Rabbi Finman, you told this story like four lessons ago. I mean, so I only listened to it the day before yesterday.
Pause.
They need to hear it. Tell the story.
So, anyway, the Rambam was a senior advisor to the caliph in Egypt. And there were those people who were not happy with it. But one person said, listen, when you approach the Rambam, I'll make you a deal. He says, I can train cats to be waiters. Mm-hmm. He says, we'll make you a wager. If I'm successful, then you leave town. And if I'm not successful, I leave town. Fine, good. So the whole thing over there, how long is it going to take? And they send out invitations. At the bottom invitation, it says the waiters will be cats. Okay, and they come to everybody comes to this state affair over here, and lo and behold, the cats are walking on their hind legs, and they're holding these little trays, and they're giving people stuff. And guy comes over to the Baal Shem Tov and says to the Rambam and says, "So, what do you think?"
Nope.
So the guy walked away chuckling, ha ha ha. The Rambam took out of his pocket a small box and opened it up, and out popped a mouse. Now you heard this story, yeah?
No, no cats.
Yeah. What happened with the hind legs and the dishes and the tables and forget it.
They're getting the mouse.
Forget it. Okay, so we can put up a good show and show that.
So the cat was supposed to say the mouse is disgusting. I don't want to hear it. A nice Hamish mouse would have.
Exactly. So changing a person's nature,
yes,
it's very, very hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, just if you look at mankind in general.
Right.
Okay. People really haven't progressed in 5,000 years.
Correct.
The average human being is the same barbarian they were 5,000 years ago. It's just now we're more sophisticated at doing it.
Just dressed it up.
Right.
So, people, they try, they work. We're still the same people we were, yeah, what we've always been. But we can try. Okay? And he says, if you do try, well, maybe, you can make it like second nature. You know, but they say about it, alcoholics, there's no such thing as a person who's cured of alcoholism.
Right.
You have a person who for 80 years never had a drink, but that doesn't mean he's not an alcoholic.
Right.
So, kishayargu lemoizetz hara, and when he accustoms himself to think that evil is disgusting, yinimus ksas be'emes. What happens then is it truly becomes disgusting to him. Kishayargu lismayach nafshei b'Hashem, and when a person decides to gladden his soul with Hashem, al yidei hizbayinus b'gedolus Hashem, through meditating in the greatness of Hashem, Hari Isarusa de Litati Isarusa de la Ela. So it says arousal from below causes an arousal from above. This idea, you put forth, you make the initial effort, and Hashem will respond in much greater kind.
Right.
Okay, that's the relationship that we have with Hashem. We have to go first. That's always the thing.
It seems like the harder part than despising evil would be recognizing evil.
Baruch Hashem,
human mind, you know, it's easy.
Okay, Baruch Hashem, we have a Torah that tells us what's evil and what's not.
No, I'm just saying, but we as people, like, in everyday life, you know, it's like, oh, that's not really so bad, or that's not really, you know. Like,
right. The Alter Rebbe is very, doesn't pull punches. Either it's holy or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
No, I just, quick personal story. I was in New York, and I was in a restaurant, and I was with a friend, and there was a girl at the next table who was kind of sneeze, but not, you know, long sleeves, but anyway, so
I understand.
So I actually had to ask my friend to move over so I could, you know, bench, but my mind started to wander a bit, but I was like, well, maybe she's becoming from, and maybe she's trying, and then, like, very quick, I'm like, whoa, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
This is like my Yetzer Hara, it doesn't matter what she's doing, not doing.
It's not your business, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to look. Anyway, so every little bit of effort that you put forth, Hashem puts forth back more. Okay, so, v'kulei hai v'ulai, and what'll happen if he does this enough? Ya'ara olav ruach memarim, he'll arouse a spirit from above, v'yizak elavichinus ruach m'shorsh ezit tzadik, and he will merit. This doesn't happen often. That there'll be an extension of some tzaddik will extend his soul to shitis aver boy la avedas Hashem besimcha amitis, and it'll pass over him, and he will now then truly take joy in Hashem. Meaning, he'll hit tzaddik.
Right.
In other words, how is it that a person could hit tzaddik? Is if another tzaddik says,
shares.
Yeah, I'm gonna extend my soul to you a little bit. We'll hook up. We'll give you a lifeline over here,
right,
and you'll be a tzaddik. Okay, but
don't bank on it.
Yeah, don't. Right, first you have to find a tzaddik. I mean, you know, and one thing is, if a person says, "Yeah, I am a tzaddik," you know, for one thing, for sure, he's not. Yes, as it says, "Kedeksiv simchu tzaddikim b'Hashem." As it says, that you should find joy in Hashem. Does it happen? Yes, it could happen, but it's going to take a tremendous. This is all a gift from Hashem.
Right.
Even this, it says later on in Tanya in the 40s, chapter 40s, that this idea of finding delight in spirituality to the point where it's tangible, the person says, "Yeah, this is so geschmack, this spirituality stuff," is only achieved as a gift from God. You're not getting it from here. It's only because the person's like putting forth the effort, and Hashem cuts him some slack. So this, that a person's going to become a tzaddik, That's a real long rope the Almighty's throwing him.
It's really all Hashem.
Oh, it's totally, it's totally and completely up to Hashem at that point.
It's just us turning
around. I mean, in the late 20s, he talks about people who are so depressed that they'd never reach the level of tzaddik. Because, I mean, if a person's going to get to the point where they think they should be a tzaddik, maybe they've worked on themselves such. You're not talking about people who necessarily fool themselves.
Right.
Okay? There are many stories of people who came to the Baal Shem Tov with complaints that they didn't achieve the level of tzaddik. And one person said that he saw in a book that if you don't talk Dvarim B'Teilim for 40 days, you'll have a revelation of Eliyahu. Hmm. And he didn't speak Lashon, he didn't speak Dvarim B'Teilim for 40 days. And he didn't see Eliyahu. And he wants to know what's happened, what's the problem. So the Baal Shem Tov said to him, did you daven during those 40 days? He said, yeah, I davened. So did you say Tillim? He said, I said Tillim all the time. He said, oh, those were your Dvarim B'Teilim. So, yeah, empty Dvarim B'Teilim is empty words.
How is that? How is Tehillim Dvarim B'Teilim?
Because he wasn't thinking about it. It was just.
Oh, he was using it as a means.
It was syllables. It was just syllables. It was Dvarim B'Teilim, just empty words.
Right.
Okay. The guy who came to the Baal Shem Tov and complained, he didn't say he's impressing the Baal Shem Tov that he wears white and he doesn't speak Lashon Hara and he rolls in the snow. I think I told this story not too long ago too. When the Baal Shem Tov, we came to Baal Shem Tov, knocked on the door. Mrs. Baal Shem Tov answered the door. Said, my husband's back in the stable. So you go around the back. He went around the back and he sees the Baal Shem Tov is petting a horse, saying, you're such a good horse. You're such a nice horse. And the Baal Shem Tov says, he comes walking here. He says, you're probably wondering why I was petting that horse and congratulating him so much. He said, yeah. He says, I kind of sort of was, as a matter of fact. It's not that the Baal Shem Tov just started petting horses, saying, you're such a good horse. So he said, you should know, you see, that horse was white. Wears white clothes. And that horse doesn't speak Lashon Hara. And that snow rolls in the snow. And at a point, he blipped off air. And he's still a horse. And he says that what's going to happen, and then, if a person does get this big break, da-da-da-da, so he fulfilled the oath, be a tzaddik. So it's not, it's out there. It is attainable.
Right.
You have to do some really heavy lobbying and a lot of work. If you want to be a tzaddik, go for it. He says in chapter 27, Halavai Abainani, just, you know.
And the end, what you did was fulfilled your vow.
Yes.
It wasn't, you didn't do anything beyond, you just fulfilled your vow.
And you didn't accomplish anything. That's right, correct. You don't even have the satisfaction of accomplishing something.
Right.
Because you did what you're supposed to. Okay, our goal is, you know, be righteous. And if you're righteous, so someone's going to congratulate you for doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So be continued.
Indeed.